Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to bring you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Register to restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning there, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you?
I'm very well.
Today we have some things to talk about. Our number one thing we want to talk about is the one of the most respected rankings of the restaurants of the world has come out. Restaurant Magazine has ranked the top restaurants in the world. Of the top 20 restaurants, the United States had five of the top 20 restaurants in the world. And there was a big change-up at the top. There was a place called the Fat Duck in England, where our chef ate just recently. He went over to England to try the food. And the Fat Duck, for a long time, has been rated the number one restaurant in the world. And it was knocked off its perch by what is probably universally considered the number one restaurant in the world, a restaurant in Spain called El Bulli, where the chef is a gentleman named Ferran Adrià.
And a lot of you have heard us, if you listen to the show all the time, you've heard us talk about El Bulli and the kind of avant-garde cuisine that they're doing at in this restaurant.
The number three restaurant in the world is my favorite restaurant in France. The restaurant's named after the chef, Pierre Gagnaire. Pierre Gagnaire is a Basque gentleman who makes some of the most. I've had dinner there once and lunch there two or three times, and I would say that it's certainly my favorite restaurant in France. One of my favorite
restaurants in the world.
Amazing. We took a lot of inspiration. Our restaurants are very different, but we took a couple of ideas. He was the first restaurant where I went, and I saw he had standing floor lamps like you would have in your living room, but they were sort of high design. And I thought, wow, that's wonderful. And we incorporated that into Catherine Lombardi. Very important guy. I just love his food. And the number four restaurant in the world is American, the French Laundry from Thomas Keller,
Some
who was
you,
on our show.
Again, heard us talk to Thomas Keller about the French Laundry and Per Se and his new restaurant, Ad Hoc.
That's pretty cool. He's the fourth best restaurant in the world. He's been on our show. Yeah, I'm taking credit for him already. But check this out.
Yeah, all you did was talk to him, Francis.
I know. I love it. And we said something like, oh, you're so good. And we were obescent is what we were. But you know why? Because we've eaten at his restaurants and they're great.
Yeah, he's
but
really
check
talented,
this man. Out. Thomas Keller is coming up as the number one restaurant in America. Ready for this? Because he's the fourth best restaurant in the world. That's the number one restaurant in America. You want to know what the eighth best restaurant in the world is, which is the second best restaurant in America? Per Se New York City,
Thomas Keller's
New York
restaurant.
So he is both the first best restaurant and the second best restaurant in America.
You know, when we talk to him, one of the things that I have the utmost respect for is rather than, you know, in any way reduce the French Laundry when he opened Per Se, and Francis and I will tell you, opening a new restaurant is just a tremendous amount of work. It takes a tremendous amount of attention. Rather than take the attention away from the French Laundry when he opened Per Se, he closed French Laundry for 4 months.
Can you imagine?
A restaurant that's booked every night, all the time. You have to call 30 days in advance. To the day. You have to call between 9 a.m. and 9:05 is the only time they answer their phone. It's a 30-seat restaurant, 30 days in advance of when you want the reservation. And you have to keep calling through the busy signal and hope that you're one of the lucky 30 people to get in that day.
Yeah, crazy.
And
huh?
What he did was he closed that restaurant completely, even though it's booked every night all the time for 4 months in order to focus on it.
And he expanded very, very slowly. I mean, he could own 30 restaurants right now.
Easily.
But anyway, so that's quite a feat. So Thomas Keller, according to Restaurant Magazine, has the number one and the number two restaurant in the United States, and the number four and the number eight restaurant overall. Also in the United States, the next one up is Jean George, with the 16th best restaurant in the world for Jean George Restaurant in New York City. The 15th best restaurant in the world, it should be known as Alain Ducasse, who has a restaurant in New York called Alain Ducasse.
I had an awesome experience at Alain Ducasse in Paris. Right?
Well, the New York restaurant isn't named here.
Right,
but
it's not listed.
15th best restaurant in the world is Alain Ducasse Paris. So
yeah, what they're doing in New York, I think, is not quite exactly what they're doing in Paris. But you know, the Parisian restaurant, I think, belongs on this list for sure.
Then below that, you know who's the 14th best restaurant in the world? is that jerk chef Gordon Ramsay, who's got that reality show where all he does is yell at housewives and make them cry.
Yeah.
I'm not eating there.
I agree. Just think that he's...
I've just told you to make a souffle, and now you can't make it. I'm like, of course you can't make it. She's a housewife from Des Moines. You British jerk.
Well, I don't understand. I don't understand the show, and we'll talk about that on another day.
Restaurant reality shows, like the one hosted by Colicchio, Top Chef. Mm-hmm. It's about, you know, putting people together. It's about exploring food. It's about taking a look at what it takes to be a top chef.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not about humiliating people. You know, that's the worst of reality shows, is when we revel in someone else's humiliation, which is what Gordon Ramsay's all about.
Mm-hmm.
The hell with him. All right. 18th best restaurant in the world being
hell,
the...
I get it. To hell with him. Hell's
hell
Kitchen.
With him. Hell's
I
kitchen.
Get it. I
being
get
the fourth best restaurant in the United States, and the 18th best restaurant in the world is Restaurant Danielle in New York City. And then finishing out the American Tingents, the 20th best restaurant in the world, and the fifth best restaurant in America is Chez Panisse.
Wow.
Chez Panisse has been around for a long time,
for
everybody.
A really long time. It's one of the things that...
That's Alice Waters' restaurant in San Francisco.
At the super high end, it is very, very, very unusual for a restaurant to stay at the top of the restaurant business for more than 10 or 15 years. Without going through a major metamorphosis. Generally, when a restaurant is considered to be the best in the world or one of the great restaurants in the world, it's got some type of cutting edge. It's at the forefront of what's going on.
At least in America, especially in America.
In the United States. Yeah. And so that changes so frequently that I think it's very, very difficult to have a restaurant that unless it goes through one of those metamorphoses, that stays at the top of its game for a
And Chez Panisse is like one of the founding restaurants of modern American culinary tradition.
Alice Waters, just one of the most important chefs in our country.
And still current. Okay, let me give you the other restaurants that are, they've listed the top 50 overall, so let me give you the other American restaurants. Charlie Trotter's in Chicago is the 26th best restaurant in the world, which, you know, Charlie's been on the show, and he's great, and we're going to go to his restaurant very soon, actually. We have Le Bernardin in New York, which is, we've eaten at Le Bernardin a number of times.
Great,
tremendous
great.
Fish restaurant in New York.
Right, look, Eric Repair is the chef
Eric
there.
Eric Repair, yeah.
Really just...
The Gramercy Tavern is the 45th best restaurant in the world, and that's in New York City, and that is like the place where Mark and I go whenever we're entertaining. We go to the bar. Actually, one of our ex-employees is working there, and her boyfriend Jim Meehan and Valerie, who worked for us for a long time, is working there at the bar. You can go ask them about stuff. We go to the bar to meet people. It's a central location in Gramercy, and we dine there.
It's such a comfortable place where you can everything you can always count on, and the things you can count on it are, it's not overdone. It's not about the show. It's not about, you know, this froofy.
And you know what else you can count on? It's always, they're always, like, Danny Meyer, his restaurants are all, like, Midwestern
and Tom
nice.
And Tom Quickio is a chef.
Right, but Midwestern nice. Mm-hmm. They're nice, totally unpretentious, beautiful, warm room. And the 40th best restaurant in the world, that's not 40th best restaurant. They're the 45th best restaurant in the world. I got one more thing before we come
on
the close of the
hour.
You
know what I like about them being nice?
What?
They're nice because they're nice. They're not nice because they have to be.
The 40th best restaurant in the world is called L'Amboisie in France. Mm-hmm. Mark and I dined there. Hated it.
Hated it.
Nasty Frenchman.
Rude.
You nasty Frenchman.
Although
I got
to say, one of the coolest spaces that I've ever had dinner.
Except it was a little dirty.
It was all compartmentalized, and you know, each room had just two or three tables.
And we thought,
it's a restaurant in New Jersey called Restaurant David Drake that's kind of cut up the same way as L'Amboisie was.
Yeah, but I like David Drake's restaurant. L'Amboisie were like, you nasty French people. We're not having dessert. And we went to Alain Ducasse and had dessert, and they treated us really nice. All right, so there's the roundup of the top restaurants in the world. You know what? We'll put that list up on our website for you, and you can check out the top, or at least the restaurants that we mentioned that we recommend. And we're not putting L'Amboisie up there. So to them, the Frenchman. To you, Frenchman, for treating me like that. Okay, when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking to Craig LeBan. He is the Philadelphia Inquirer restaurant critic and the most important voice on restaurants in Philadelphia. Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Craig LeBan. He is the Philadelphia Inquirer restaurant critic. He's been called the meanest man in Philadelphia, but we think he's kind of nice.
Hey, Craig, how are you today?
I'm feeling so mean today. Sun is shining. It's beautiful out. Oh, that puts me in a terrible mood.
Well, you know, we explained this last time you were on the air, but why don't you explain to our listeners who may be listening to you for the first time why you were called the meanest man in Philadelphia and by whom?
You know, I have to apologize. I blocked that out. I try to listen to only people who say I'm wonderful and that I have a wonderful palate.
You do have a wonderful palate, but actually, well, so let me fill it in. The why people have accused Craig LeBond of being mean, he's the preeminent restaurant critic in Philadelphia, which is a restaurant scene that has really, over the last 20 years or so, been emerging, and when it wasn't quite so serious a market, there's a lot of sort of cheerleader journalism, you know, people who do restaurant reviews but they never say anything negative. And Craig sort of calls it like he sees it, and I think a lot of people were averse to, you know, having an accurate restaurant.
I think
critic.
Some people were feeling overcalled.
Yeah. What do you, and where I'm marking my position is, you know, you need valid restaurant criticism. If I ever pick up a magazine, and we know they're all out there, they're fluff magazines, and they only say positive things, I put it down because it doesn't, you know, it's an advertorial.
Maybe for me, it's right, exactly. It's an advertisement or a way to look at somebody's menu.
Yeah.
But it's not a true review.
And frankly, we're outside of Craig's jurisdiction, so we don't care what he thinks of us. So.
Well, you know, stage left last time I was there. Oh,
was that you with the
straw hat? I didn't
mean
to mention that. Yeah, the guy with the multicolored wig and the clown nose.
Yeah,
that
just
me.
Just remember, you're on 7 second delay. So.
Yeah, right, exactly. Now, actually, you know, let's talk about let's talk this off in a little bit of a separate topic. You review restaurants outside of Philadelphia sometimes, where Philadelphians go. You're going to review in the Jersey Shore. You do sometimes, right?
That's right. As a matter of fact, I was down there for 2 weeks at the beginning, sort of mid June. And we put together two fairly, you know, large roundups of restaurants. I think I reviewed 10 places.
Uh-huh. Can you give us a heads up of who you're going to review?
I can. Sure, I can. These are, you know, certainly given that I write for the Inquirer, we focus on, you know, the part of the shore that Philadelphians, I think, consider their own. That would be Long Beach Island South.
Right. Mm-hmm. My family and I vacation in Ocean City, New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
Year,
so. Well, Ocean City's my home base. It's so central, and it's great for the kids. Mm-hmm. And I love those donuts at Brown's every morning, which also makes probably, I think, my definitive beach grill cheeseburger. What a great place. But we love Ocean City. It's
will you write about stuff like that?
Oh, sure. Well, when I go down the shore, you know, I'm a non-denominational critic, and I cover the whole gamut of foods, styles, neighborhoods, price points, you know, and you know, good is such a relative thing, and it just depends what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But down the shore, I think people look for a total variety of experiences, so that's where we're aiming at. But of course, some seasons kind of have a natural focus to them. I think last year, a lot of movement in the casino industry, you know, to create new restaurants was sort of, you know, one of the sort of most visible things. This year, there is still a lot of construction in the Atlantic City casinos for the restaurants, but a lot of that was delayed by construction. So, you know, I really started, you know, got back to focusing on the kind of restaurants that people go to in the beach communities.
Mm-hmm. So what are we going to see coming up from your reviews of South Jersey restaurants?
Well, one of the interesting things that sort of came out of my discussions with the restaurateurs that I visited was the real push to create casual places with a little bit of style and substance, and the push away from the sort of formal dining, the sort of white tablecloth dining that sort of, I think, marked the rise of places like Cape May.
Mm-hmm.
One of the owners of the Washington Inn, for example, which is one of the real sort of landmark, I think.
Sure, they've been on the show. We've had them on the show.
Yeah, well, they for example, opened up a place called Lucky Bones, which is a very casual grill that focuses on fish, but especially on, you know, wood-fired pizzas. And they do a really fine job at that. You know, really, they got the basic. You know, you've seen these wood-fired. Actually, it's not wood-fired. It's a hearth, brick hearth pizza oven that you've seen in a lot of restaurants. But they're doing a good job with that. You know, and it sort of gives a different twist to shore pizza.
Right.
But it's a casual, no reservations place. I think, you know, they have an entire wine list of $20 a bottle.
The places down there, there's a bent now toward away from the formal and to the more casual familial types of places.
Well, the Craig family who I was speaking with told me that they've seen really in the last three seasons you know, as the Jersey Shore goes increasingly condo, you find more homeowners as opposed to renters.
Mm-hmm.
Their whole approach to eating down the shore has changed. They go out less often, and they want to spend less on what they eat because they're spending all that money on the place.
Sure, because it's a gazillion dollars for a house down the shore now. So
right, you know, so that doesn't mean you know that there have not been ambitious places down the shore. You know, there's a new I guess it's about a year old, but it's new to me, a new BYOB in Stone Harbor called Sea Salt,
mm-hmm.
an Argentine-born chef who trained in a lot of good kitchens in New York City is doing, I think, really fresh, seasonal-inspired food. A lot of it has a sort of a South American flair to it, but it also he's taking good Jersey clams and putting them on pizza.
Sounds great.
You know, he's making really interesting combinations. You know, crab salad with rhubarb sorbet on top and ginger crust. I mean, really interesting stuff.
Craig, when we come back, will you talk to us about the casino restaurants?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Today we are proud to present Jackie Naylor.
Once upon a time, New Year's Eve was a night for swank jazz, champagne, and caviar. Ring in 2007 at just such a gathering with us. The Restaurant Guys present a New Year's Eve jazz concert at the Crossroads Theater starring Ms. Jackie Naylor. Jackie's been called the new voice of jazz by Vogue magazine. Jazz Times says, in the never-ending Next Big Thing sweepstakes, bet on Jackie Naylor. She's headlined internationally. She's played with Michael McDonald and David Sanborn. And on New Year's Eve, she'll play to a sold-out crowd at the Crossroads Theater right next to our restaurants. Dine before or after the show at either one of our acclaimed restaurants. There are hotel accommodations within walking distance, one of the best jazz singers in the country, two of the best restaurants in the state, an evening not to be forgotten. Go to stageleft.com or Catherine Lombardi.com for details, reservations, and menus, or call 732-828-4444. Put the swank back in New Year's Eve. Spend it with the Restaurant Guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Philadelphia Inquirer restaurant critic Craig Leban, one of the, well, probably the preeminent voice on restaurants in Philadelphia. And if you're listening from outside the Jersey area, you may realize, you may hear us saying strange things. We don't go to the beach here. We don't go to the shore. We don't visit the ocean. We go down the shore.
Even if you live south of it.
Yeah, you go down the shore. And so, Craig, you were reviewing, you're coming
I'm
over.
I'm glad to hear they teach proper grammar in North Jersey as well.
Exactly. So now, you're reviewing some Jersey Shore restaurants because it's relevant to Philadelphians, because, as we know, South Jersey is very close to Philadelphia.
Right.
What about the casino restaurants? We talked about the more casual restaurants down the shore, but like the Borgata has done some very good or some very ambitious high-end Italian restaurants and high-end restaurants.
Michael Mina's going in there.
Right.
What's your take? And we only got a couple of minutes in the segment before the news. What's your take on Atlantic City restaurants?
Well, I mean, I think it's a long time coming, and it's been even when that whole thing started, you know, the Borgata opened their first wave of restaurants a few years ago, and the other, I'd say the other casinos, you know, there's been activity, but they've been surprisingly slow to follow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Tropicana last year opened the Quarter, which was a really big project with places like Red Square and the Sound of Philadelphia. It's more of a mass market, fun kind of place, aiming for a middle market, whereas the Borgata has really been going for the high-end stuff with, you know, Susanna Fu and the Italian places you mentioned and the Old Homestead Steakhouse. What's interesting about the newer wave, the next wave of these of Atlantic City casino restaurants, especially if you sort of look at the Borgata's new roster, they've got Wolfgang Puck, Michael Fina, and Bobby Flay opening restaurants. And that's the first time, Susanna Fu is a big-name chef in this region, but that's the first time you really have national chefs who are associated, you know, already with restaurants in Los Angeles and have a national brand putting their foot into the waters of Atlantic City.
It's an exciting time, and I think that if there are any casino owners opening, that a Stage Left or a Catherine Lombardi in Atlantic City Casino would probably be your next wisest move, and that's my expert opinion as a restaurant consultant. When we come back from the news, we're going to be talking more with Craig Leban of the Philadelphia Inquirer. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to bring you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us Monday through Friday from 11 to 12. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today our guest is Craig Leban. He's the Philadelphia Inquirer restaurant critic, and he's joining us today to talk about, we spent the last half an hour talking about some restaurants he's going to be reviewing in the southern part of Jersey. But I want to talk about the Philly restaurant scene in, I'm going to extrapolate from a review that you recently wrote, because I think it's relevant to a lot of emerging foodie cities, and not just Philadelphia. I think it has broader implications. And here I'm going to read from one of your reviews from May 21st. When Rich Landau first announced plans to move his groundbreaking vegan restaurant, Horizons Cafe, from Willow Grove to Center City, he hoped the move would bring it the credibility of a downtown location. But I'm thinking it's quite the opposite. No sophisticated restaurant scene can be viewed as complete anymore without some serious vegetarian cooking, let alone non-dairy, animal-free vegan. And until February, when Landau and his wife, Kate Jacoby, opened their extraordinary new venture, Bella Vista, in Philly's veggie landscape was borderline pitiful. So you're saying that by opening this vegan, animal-free, non-dairy restaurant in Philadelphia, that's another step in Philadelphia's evolution as a dining city.
Absolutely. The restaurant, Bella Vista is the name of the neighborhood. The restaurant is actually called Horizons.
So
many people want that kind of an option now. I think that the whole school of let's step back from vegan cooking and just talk about vegetarian cuisine, I think has advanced to the point where, a city with a sort of a deep and varied cooking scene really should have somebody taking this seriously.
Yep.
And people are around the country. So it was about time that Philadelphia acquired its own sort of signature vegetarian restaurant.
Well, I'll ask you a question, because you're seeing more and more in the great restaurants, and a lot of great restaurants anyway. You're seeing vegetarian tasting menus in more traditional types of restaurants.
Sure.
Do you think that a restaurant needs to have that type of a tasting menu or offering it at this point in time for that type of cuisine?
Well,
great?
I mean, a tasting menu. I don't think any restaurant needs a tasting menu. That's a certain grand gesture. I think most vegetarians I know would be happy just to have something other than pasta with beans to order, I think just some thoughtful cooking for vegetarians is kind of become de rigueur. I mean, most restaurants, most of the better restaurants have a vegetarian offering.
Mm-hmm.
But you can look at that and really see what kind of creativity and effort a chef puts into it. And it says a lot about the kitchen.
I think it's funny, because I think one of the reasons that people have to be versatile with vegetarian courses is, and one of the reasons that chefs now, the best chefs in the world, use as a matter of pride that they have many vegetarian options, and they don't need to use, because they are talented enough, they don't need to use meat or fish as the center of the plate. And I think
it does
say a lot about the kitchen.
Well, and certain foods I think are hard to. They show a certain skill in terms of cooking, and I think to do something wonderful with vegetables year round. Anybody can go to the farmer's market when it's all in season, and you have all this wonderful produce that just needs to be put in a bowl and you eat it. That's easy to do, but I mean the people who can sort of really transform vegetables and extract essences.
Mm-hmm.
And then put it in the context of what I consider to be real cooking, not just on a plate. Here's your vegetarian special. I mean,
right.
But real cooking without that sort of prejudice to
mm-hmm.
it, you know,
where the plate is designed and thought through
yeah.
from start to finish.
And this restaurant, Horizons, has sort of done that. They've sort of gotten beyond the sort of novelty of making funny things with tofu and seitan and tempeh, and they've really just sort of stepped into the next level where if you look at any of the dishes that they're cooking there, they're complex, they're thoughtful, they have a theme, and the flavors are focused, and they're really layered. And it's quite an interesting place.
Well, Craig, one of the things that I've never truly understood about vegetarian restaurants is when they start to make things like faux scallops or you know mock shrimp or flavors like that are designed to make you believe that you're eating the protein. Generally, when I'm thinking about having a vegetarian dish or even a vegan dish, I'm trying to move away from that, not towards it.
Well, interestingly enough, when I spoke with the chef of this restaurant, Rich Landau, we talked a lot about it because their first restaurant was Horizons Cafe. It was in Willow Grove, which is a northern suburb of Philadelphia, when they had things on their menu like, you know, seitan chicken wings and tofu scallops.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they moved into the city, not only had the food itself matured and not only had the room matured and the service, he took away those labels and felt that perhaps wrongly that or not that the sort of urban city crowd was sort of sophisticated enough to not need this sort of basic frame of reference to just approach the food.
Right. He's not taking tofu and trying to make it like chicken substitute. He's actually making a food that centers on whatever it is that he's using.
But for a lot of people, you know, we'll take a non-vegetarian friend or family member to one of these restaurants, and it'll seem so scary to some people who are less adventurous. And I think that was sort of the assumption was that you needed to give people a sort of, I called it a faux frame of reference to just to get started.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they've moved beyond that, and I think it speaks well for what they're doing.
Yeah, Francis and I on a trip to San Francisco one time, we went to a restaurant called Roxanne's, which was a...
I tricked him into coming.
A not just vegetarian restaurant.
Is it raw food?
That was a raw food, yeah. Raw food restaurant.
Raw
that,
vegan
that sadly
restaurant.
No longer exists. But as we're leaving, it was just about a half a mile from a place called Marin County Brewing, which was kind of a, you know, brew pub burger place.
Where we were having a beer, and that's where Mark and Lou popped me the question. They said, okay, where are we going for dinner? I'm like, well, it's this raw food vegetarian vegan restaurant.
I said, okay, make me a reservation at Marin County Brewing for a burger when we're done.
Yeah. But what we found was we went out to Roxanne's, and my rather large partners, Lou and Mark, we did have a tasting menu there, and we had a bottle of wine, and we were full, and it was wonderful, and the food wasn't substitute anything or
nut
fake anything.
Butter is very filling when it's made into all sorts of different things.
And and the food had really matured of its own.
But people, you know, people, all kinds of people are going, and I was careful to take a couple guys from my block who, you know, rather be eating, you know, steak, and mm-hmm. And were quite skeptical, and they were actually quite happy.
Philadelphia's changing. It's changed a lot in the last 20 years, and I think it's continuously changing. That is becoming more of a restaurant scene. I think there's
and the restaurants
some,
down
some
there
really cool places.
The restaurants down there are different. I mean, look at Mark Vetri, who owns Vetri.
Mm-hmm.
It is a terrific place, and he is one of the top chefs in Philly. Okay. But if you go to his place, and there are beautiful, elegant places like Striped Bass in Philly, of course, mm-hmm. that we talked about,
Lebec Fan.
But Mark Vetri's place has a very rustic feel to it. If you looked at just the dining room, you would think, oh, a nice little trattoria. And then mm-hmm. you sit down and you get this amazing food that comes out. And wine is always a challenge in Philadelphia, but he has a smaller, well-chosen wine list, and the staff is very professional and elegant, but it's a different feel. It's not as high energy a feel, and I don't say that in any way derogatorily.
And just Francis just said something that I want to make sure that our readers understand, because a lot of
our readers, listeners.
Listeners, a lot of our listeners understand, if you're in Jersey, please expect to pay a little bit more for wine in Philadelphia. They pay a lot more for their wine, and you that's just part of dining in Philly is the wine is going to be a little bit more.
But I think for a long time, as we discussed earlier, that Philly was not as serious about cuisine as it is right.
As it is today. I think that's true.
And you know, as we talked about with Craig, there, you know, the gastropub movement is, you know, is alive and well there. But
mm-hmm.
also, it's a great city. It's a great city because of a very appreciative population and because of, you know, Craig helping to raise the standards or report on the rising bar in Philadelphia. It's a great place for a young person without a tremendous amount of capital to go and open a restaurant, which is very hard to do in Chicago or New York. It's just it's too capital intensive in New York, and it depends on too many. The real estate's just too tough.
Well, it's funny, and some of the chefs we've spoken to have said, you know, I was a sous chef in New York City. I did this in New York City, and when I became an executive chef, I went to Philly because there was fewer barriers to entry.
Because $100,000 doesn't buy you a squat. Well, when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Craig Lebon. He's the Philadelphia Inquirer restaurant critic. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Floors, walls, and lighting. The Restaurant Guys learned long ago that the key to making a space look great are floors, walls, and lighting. There's no tougher test to a carpet than a busy restaurant. From design to installation to cleaning, the Gillespie Group has handled the Restaurant Guys restaurant floors for more than 10 years. Designers know what looks great on the first day. Bob Gillespie knows what will continue to look great year after year. Gillespie doesn't just install carpets. Their quality clean division has experience and expertise to keep that carpet looking great. In our business, it's the details that matter. In your home or office, the details make a lasting impression. The Gillespie Group handles projects from large hotels to offices right down to your living room. Look down. Go on, look down. Right there by your feet. You see. You need the Gillespie Group. Call them at 732-254-5508 or visit them at thegillespiegroup.com. Tell them the Restaurant Guys sent you and get a free cleaning with any installation. Remember, it's Gillespie for carpet and flooring, 732-254-5508.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Craig Lebon, who is the restaurant critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's probably the most important voice on food in that city. We were talking about vegetarian tasting menus, vegetarian restaurants, and this one restaurant, Horizons, which you just recently reviewed, and they're vegetarian and vegan. And what's I think many people will find surprising is that they're very self-conscious that their wine list be vegan as well. Will you explain to people how a wine list might not be vegan friendly?
Well, this is a topic that I've only just begun to learn about, so I'm not exactly the expert. But as it was explained to me, many wines, most commercial wines, use certain animal products they call that the fining of the wine, finishing, sort of clarification of the wines. They're often filtered and they're often clarified to sort of get a nice
right.
So the visual look.
Right. Anciently, a lot of people used blood or egg, but usually some type of protein.
Yeah, it would be the same as making a consommé.
Yep.
You would cook the wine, but in any case, animal products are used in a lot of processes for wine, spirits, and beer, and these folks have took it on themselves to call every winemaker that they were considering.
It's a lot of work.
And ask them, you know, do you use that? Do you use that? And a lot of the biodynamic wine producing, and I sort of threw them a curveball because, you know, in true biodynamic farmers, it's sort of a variation on organic. It's really not. They're separate things, but the same idea that they bury bullhorns filled with all kinds of things.
Crystals,
and release
right side up, and
you know, nutrients into the. And she just looked, you know, appalled that there was a bullhorn anywhere in the field that her wine was growing in.
So she had some biodynamic wines on it.
They had the biodynamic wines, but they sort of researched it and decided that was okay somehow.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe the bull died naturally,
you know that quizzical tone in your voice? I agree with it 100% there, Craig.
Craig, I want to talk about another subject quickly, and that's the smoking ban that's coming up in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
How are the restaurant owners in Philadelphia taking to it?
Well, I think most of the restaurant owners saw that coming for a long time, and the attitude that you mostly hear was, as long as it's everybody, they're okay with it. If they felt that some people were going to have a ban and some people weren't,
well,
I think they felt that it would have been unfair.
That's what happened here in New
Jersey. You mean kind of like the casinos?
Right.
You mean kind of like that?
Just so everybody knows what's going on there, because the mom-and-pop restaurants can't have smoking, but because the poor casinos need so much help, the casinos in New Jersey are the only places that are really exempted from the public indoor smoking ban.
Yes.
So we want you to know, actually, Craig, that we're really, really happy that Philadelphia has gone smoke-free. Because we've lost a couple of our prime customers who were like, oh, you guys can't allow smoking anymore? All right, we're going to go to Philly.
Yeah.
Well, it's amazing. You know, obviously people feel very strongly about the whole issue. But if you, even, you know, it, I'm not going to say it was becoming a non-issue because it was still, but a lot of a strong percentage of the new restaurants that I was reviewing that had bars were non, chose to be smoke-free.
Smoke-free or smoking only in one very small encapsulated
part
of the
restaurant.
It was
good business at the end, a good business decision on a lot of people's parts, and they were, it was sort of a free market-driven initiative. But
except that we had a separately ventilated smoking room for cigars after dinner.
Oh, right.
And those guys spent a lot of money. And they said, oh, we're going to Philadelphia now. And I went, oh.
Don't
well,
go.
And then we called them up into the Philadelphia Smoking Man and said, ha, come back.
Craig, I want to take umbrage with just one small thing that you put in your one of your latest reviews, a restaurant called 19.
Yes.
And it's there's a this feeling that sometimes big is more with a wine list, and especially a wine list by the glass.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things you wrote about was there were, you know, you didn't have to order by the bottle because there were so many great wines by the glass selections. And I'm always concerned when I see too large a wine by the glass selection.
We worked in a restaurant once that had like 35 ports by the glass.
Right.
And by the time you got to the glass of 1966 Taylor Fladgate Port, it had been open for 11 months.
Yeah. And
no, absolutely. And that's an issue that was brought up. Wine bars are one of the real big trends that are starting to finally make its way into the Philadelphia restaurant scene. I mean, I think it's probably the number one trend I've been seeing in restaurants over the last 6 months. So wine preservation is a major topic of discussion. And, you know, if a bottle can't be kept really for longer than a day or two, unless you have a serious cuvinier system. I mean, a lot of people are doing the vacuvin.
Right.
Sort of the
vacuum. I'll tell you, even with the Cruvenet, I noticed like, degradation of the wine.
I don't
very
like any of those things.
Yeah. But, well, you know, certainly that's an issue to be. You know, I certainly I didn't come across any off wines. Mm-hmm. What I was most pleased with is the fact that not only did you have a lot of wines to choose from in this particular restaurant. This is a remake of the sort of grand restaurants atop the Bellevue building, which is like a 100-year-old sort of nationally landmarked building in Center City. And I think they did a really nice job redoing it. And the wine bar, I think there were like 20 wines by the glass to choose from around a raw bar in the middle of the dining room, was a main component of that. What interests me most is the sort of quality of the wines by the glass.
Yeah, and the variety. I saw the one you listed.
I'll tell you,
the
you listed some of the wines, and I'll tell you, you had a Paul Hobbs wine from Argentina called El Felino there that was spectacular.
Yeah.
I saw the list of wines that you listed.
We're coming up on the close of the segment. We'll put that up on our website. The restaurant is 19 in Philadelphia, and we'll link you to Craig's review on the Philly Inquirer. Hey, Craig, thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me back.
It's been super. We hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, I'm going to have lunch now.
Extraordinary. Take care. That was Craig LeBond, Philadelphia Inquirer restaurant critic, talking with you on The Restaurant Guys. You're listening to us, The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today was Craig LeBond. He is probably the preeminent voice on restaurants in Philadelphia, which is an increasingly important restaurant city.
Yeah.
And we were talking about Wines by the Glass.
Yeah, we're talking about Wines by the Glass program, and sometimes actually patrons will criticize Francis and me because we only offer 8-9 selections by the glass in
at
our
each restaurant.
But there's a real long thought out reason why we do that. And no, we don't offer perhaps a selection, especially when you consider that our wine by the bottle list is almost 1,000 selections. There are not as many selections on there as frankly we would like to have by the glass. But one of the biggest concerns that we have in our restaurant is that you be getting served something in its optimal way.
And the wine preservation systems that are out there, the Cruvenet systems, the Vacuvin systems, the Veridivin system, frankly, we don't think they work very well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and that's a matter of opinion entirely. I mean, they work.
Yeah, Cruvenet, for instance, is a nitrogen system that prevents your wine from oxidizing. And I think there are two things there. Francis and I believe, or at least I do, that the wine does indeed change. It may not oxidize. But there is a change in the wine from what it was originally when it goes through that nitrogen system, and the other thing is, most of these people who, us included, who are buying these beer gases or these nitrogen gases, well, you buy them from these welding companies.
Yeah, you're not buying surgical grade gas.
Exactly. So they're not usually very pure. They're not usually.
And you know what? Frankly, we don't even know if that's what's throwing mm-hmm. things off. But here's our advice as we come upon the close of the hour. We're always suspicious of a place that has too many wines mm-hmm. by the glass. And when we find ourselves in a place like that, we sort of say, so what'd you open today?
Exactly. What'd you just tell me? What you just opened? Or, you know, that's exactly what I do. What's the last bottle you opened? And you know, I'd rather take a chance on a bottle not being great than a bottle not being what it's supposed to be.
All right. So Mark and I are going to go out now, and we're going to have a glass of wine and some lunch. I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to us. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12:00.